On the show today, President Joe Biden's son to plead guilty to federal crimes.
Hunter Biden is to plead guilty to a pair of charges of failing to pay income taxes.
Plus, the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has left China, but still remains concerned over some of their plans.
Made very clear that we would have deep concerns about PRC intelligence or military activities in Cuba. And we will protect our homeland. We will protect our interests.
And later, the first in a three-part series on Uyghur minorities in Western China and their treatment by the Beijing government. Today is Wednesday, June 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in downtown Washington, I'm Steve Karish. Hunter Biden, the son of President Joe Biden, has reached a tentative agreement with federal prosecutors in which he will confess to two misdemeanor tax crimes, and he's also reached a pretrial agreement with prosecutors on a separate gun possession charge. Details from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman here in Washington.
According to court papers filed on Tuesday, Hunter Biden is to plead guilty to a pair of charges of failing to pay income taxes and will enter a behavioral diversion program to keep him out of prison on a more serious charge involving illegal ownership of a gun at a time he was regularly using crack cocaine. The White House is not directly commenting on the charges in the case, which has become politicized. Some Republican lawmakers have sought to link the wrongdoing of Biden's son to the president, accusing them of corrupt business ties. They have also alleged the Justice Department, due to political pressure, is avoiding charging Hunter Biden with more serious crimes, which the White House and prosecutors deny. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
The case against Hunter Biden is, of course, fraught with politics. Both Hunter and Joe Biden have been accused of corrupt business ties by former President Donald Trump and several other Republicans. However, no evidence has been found. I was able to catch up with Steve Herman after he filed the report we just heard.
Well, according to Republicans, this is just the tip of the iceberg, and they really wanted to see the Justice Department dig much deeper, alleging all sorts of legal activities that were supposedly colluded in between the president and his son, involving Ukraine and China, and all sorts of deals running into the millions of dollars. What we do know for sure is that Hunter Biden owed more than $100,000 in taxes in each of the 2 years he did not file, that according to the Justice Department, and that was based on a taxable income of more than $1.5 million annually. So that's part of the tip of the iceberg that raised a lot of eyebrows among the Republicans.
So it does seem as if the tax charges may be legit. There are still some on the right who are saying that the Justice Department is taking it easy on him because he's the president's son.
Right. They're alleging that there is a political pressure from the White House, which is something the White House and the Justice Department deny. But the case of the president's son and all of his legitimate troubles has been a political weapon, a cudgel for Republicans to attack President Biden. It has been a bit of an Achilles heel going back to when Donald Trump was in power. And in fact, Donald Trump's first impeachment was a result of his what he called the perfect phone call with the president of Ukraine.
So how legitimate are those Republican claims that there is more corruption that we aren't finding?
There hasn't been much that's been credible that seems to have risen to the level that would result in, a case of credible prosecution against Hunter Biden. Now, it appears that this five-year investigation is over. There are also congressional investigations, and it's possible that some other bit of evidence might emerge that gives credence to what the Republicans are charging. But so far, we really haven't seen a smoking gun on that.
Former President Donald Trump has been indicted, the first time for a former president, and now there's a date set for his trial. What do we know?
A federal judge has set an August 14th date to initially hold the trial for former President Trump on his possession of classified documents, and stating that the trial would last for about 2 weeks. There are a lot of legal observers who believe there are going to be all sorts of motions between now and then that conceivably would delay that trial, not by days or weeks, but probably months. So don't hold your breath for this all to start in mid-August.
Well, we'll certainly be following that story and checking back in with you as we do. Steve Herman, VOA's chief national correspondent. Steve, thanks for your time today.
My pleasure, Steve.
The United States on Tuesday signaled concern over reports that China plans a military training facility in Cuba. This following Secretary of State Antony Blinken's trip to Beijing this past weekend. Reuters' Jillian Kitchener has more.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said on Tuesday that he voiced concerns to his counterparts in China during a rare trip to Beijing about China's military activities in Cuba.
Made very clear that we would have deep concerns about PRC intelligence or military activities in Cuba. And we will protect our homeland. We will protect our interests.
The Wall Street Journal reported on Tuesday that China and Cuba are negotiating to establish a joint military training facility on the island that could lead to the stationing of Chinese troops just 100 miles off Florida's coast. Speaking at a press conference in London after his trip to Beijing, Blinken said he pressed for opening military communication channels with China.
President Biden sent me to Beijing because he believes strongly that both the United States and China have an obligation to manage our relationship responsibly. And that starts with strengthening lines of communication.
In Beijing, the two sides appeared entrenched over a multitude of issues, from Taiwan to trade, including U.S. actions toward China's chip industry, plus human rights, and Russia's war against Ukraine, to which China maintains an impartial response.
President Biden said from the outset of Russia's aggression against Ukraine that we would stand with Ukraine for as long as it takes.
Blinken also said on Tuesday that he would announce a new and robust U.S. assistance package for Ukraine on Wednesday at a conference in London aimed at encouraging private companies to invest in the country's reconstruction after Russia's invasion.
That's Jillian Kitchener of Reuters reporting. And as we've just learned, the U.S. is planning to send more aid to Kyiv. And on Wednesday in London, the case will be made for private investment in rebuilding Ukraine. But on the ground, as Ukraine's military fights to retake Russian-occupied areas in their counteroffensive, VOA visits a reclaimed Ukrainian village that is now so packed with explosives, it may take a decade or more to clear. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports.
A few days ago, the owner of this home in the village of Kamyanka came back to clean up his garden and repair his house. We met Igor Bohoraz in a hospital in the nearest city, Izium, where he was being treated after losing a foot and lower leg. He had cleared about 20 small dragon tooth mines from his garden with a shovel, then accidentally stepped on one, triggering an explosion. He said he replanted the garden and wanted to clean up areas beyond it, but he took a wrong step and hit a mine. Bohora says he looked down to find that his foot was gone. Once a quaint and carefully manicured village, Kamyanka is now overgrown with bushes and grass. Almost every home here was destroyed in battles last fall, as Ukraine reclaimed much of the region after more than 6 months of Russian occupation. Now, only a dozen or so residents out of more than 1,100 remain, without electricity, gas, or running water. On the outskirts of the village, demining experts clear pathways so that workers can eventually restore electricity and other infrastructure. Fedoruk Volodymyr is a demining squad commander. He says it will take at least 10 years to clear the area, which remains populated and dangerous. Bohora says he knows 8 other people from the village who have lost limbs, and 2 who suffered from explosions near their eyes. He says he doubts he will live to see his village safe enough for his grandchildren to play in. He says Kamyanka was his home, where he used to fish and enjoy nature. He should be fishing now as a retiree, he says. But the war happened. Ukraine is now fighting to reclaim other Russian-held areas as its spring counteroffensive moves into summer. Demining crews say thousands of mines and other dangerous explosives have been removed from this once-occupied region, but many more remain and pose a threat to all who venture there. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Kamyanka, Ukraine.
And here are some stories we're following from around the world. An increasing number of Sudanese civilians fleeing Darfur, an area hit by repeated militia attacks, have been killed or shot as they try to escape to Chad. Albanian police raided a camp that's home to members of an Iranian opposition movement, with local media reporting that the group is suspected of orchestrating cyber attacks against foreign institutions. Getting vaccinated is an effective way to prevent infection from human papillomavirus, or HPV, a virus that can lead to cervical cancer in women and other cancers in men, but the vaccine is especially hard to come by in Venezuela. And personal health monitoring is coming to the most private of places, the restroom. A company is preparing to bring to market a smart toilet that can detect diseases in human waste. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers in a Columbia University-led study found that a lack of the amino acid taurine is one of many issues that drives the aging process in animals. Taurine is a nutrient that is naturally produced in the body and can be found in many foods, especially proteins like meat and fish. Along with this finding, the researchers also found that supplements of taurine can slow the aging process in animals such as worms, mice, and monkeys, and increase the healthy lifespans of middle-aged mice by up to 12%. The researchers' findings have been published in the journal Science. In a university press release, the study's leader, Vijay Yadav, says that, quote, "For the last 25 years, scientists have been trying to find factors that not only let us live longer, but also increase health span, the time we remain healthy in our old age." I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
It's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Now a little more info on a story we first brought you in the last program. U.S. and Canadian ships and planes continue to search for a submersible that went missing Sunday off the coast of southeastern Canada while taking tourists to explore the wreckage of the Titanic. Reuters' Ryan Chang reports.
A search is still underway for a missing submersible with 5 people on board that was touring the wreckage of the Titanic. British billionaire Hamish Harding is among the missing, according to social media posts. US and Canadian ships and planes continued to circle around the site near Newfoundland on Monday. Crews on board a Boeing P-8 aircraft, originally for anti-submarine warfare, dropped sonar buoys to locate the vessel, which lost contact with ships above on Sunday. US Coast Guard Rear Admiral John Major said they've also been reaching out to commercial vessels for help.
The location of the search is approximately 900 miles east of Cape Cod in a water depth of roughly 13,000 feet. It is a remote area, and it is a challenge to conduct a search in that remote area, but we are deploying all available assets to make sure that we can locate the craft and rescue the people on board.
The submarine operator Ocean Gate Expeditions said it lost contact with the vessel itself, called the Titan, 1 hour and 45 minutes after it began diving towards the Titanic. Authorities say it's still unclear if the sub has surfaced or if it's still underwater. but they said it could stay submerged for 96 hours. The expeditions to see the British passenger liner that famously sank in 1912 after it struck an iceberg cost $250,000 per person. Their trips set out from St. John's, Newfoundland, before heading out roughly 400 miles into the Atlantic to the wreckage site.
That's Ryan Chang from Reuters reporting. In the Southern Hemisphere, Australia's annual whale migration has begun, with researchers there documenting an unusually high number of humpbacks off the coast. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
It's one of nature's epic migrations. Thousands of whales have begun their annual journey up eastern and western Australia to breeding grounds in the north. They can often be seen and sometimes heard from the shore. Humpbacks that can grow to be the size of a bus and southern right whales were among several species that were once slaughtered for their oil, blubber and bones. Hunting was banned in Australia in 1978. Humpback numbers along the east coast have returned close to pre-whaling levels. But wildlife campaigners remain concerned about some southern right populations. Eastern Australia is known as the Humpback Highway. Whale watching from beaches and cliffs as well as from boats has become a favourite pastime. Vanessa Perotta is a marine expert at Macquarie University. She told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Tuesday that mass feeding in New South Wales state has researchers fascinated.
The feeding event, which is down at the south coast where we see a lot of congregating of whales and feeding on mass supergroups. And we're trying to understand, why is this happening? Is it the environmental conditions? Is there something with climate change that is driving this mass feeding groups? So there's a number of different things that we're looking at.
One regular visitor has become a celebrity. Migaloo is a rare white whale that was first spotted in 1991. The albino humpback has his own Twitter account and was thought to have died. But last week, a tourist flying over the Great Barrier Reef in Queensland filmed what appeared to be a white humpback swimming north. Researchers can't be sure if Australia's most famous whale has returned. But thousands of other giant marine mammals have and are continuing to swim north, much to the delight of legions of whale watchers. Between July and October, the whales and their young will begin their long journey back to Antarctic waters. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And finally, today it's the first in a three-part series on Uyghur minorities in Western China. China's mass arrests of Uyghurs and ethnic minorities in Xinjiang has been condemned by the West. One VOA journalist witnessed the repression and fear of arrest firsthand. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has more.
Fear can be paralyzing.
You just lie in your bed, but you can't just get up.
Fear also pushed Qasem Kashgar to do something he never thought possible.
I didn't want to leave my home country.
With Beijing persecuting Uyghurs in Xinjiang and police repeatedly calling him in for questioning, Kashgar fled China in 2017. He ended up in the U.S., eventually landing a job as a journalist at Voice of America. But the Uyghur reporter still feared what the Chinese government would do to his family back home if he wrote under his own name.
I've seen dozens of friends, personal mentors, teachers, and some relatives being targeted. They had been interned, imprisoned, killed.
Uyghur experts, including Sean Roberts, author of the 2020 book The War on the Uyghur, say of the estimated 11 million Uyghurs living mostly in Xinjiang, more than 1 million have been detained in mass camps.
The arrests have been ethnically profiled, mean that all Uyghurs are under constant fear of the potential that they might be detained, arrested.
The U.S. and several other countries have accused Beijing of genocide. The Chinese embassy in the U.S. declined an interview, but directed VOA to comments, stating that the camps were vocational centers and that China's policies were justified in the wake of terror attacks. Sokrat Zakir was the governor of the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region when he spoke at a 2021 event hosted by the Chinese embassy in the U.S.
Some anti-China forces in the United States and the West ignore the fact that the people of Xinjiang are living a better life. They stigmatize and demonize Xinjiang with no bottom line, reason, or grounds, and even fabricate the lie of the century of genocide.
You have 2 minutes for your prepared speech.
While living in China, Kashgar won several English-speaking competitions, this one airing on Chinese state TV.
From then on, I worked hard to become...
But the publicity caught the attention of authorities. He says police even tried to recruit him to work overseas to spy on Uyghur rights organizations.
I was disgusted. I felt dishonored.
Instead, Kashgar started a language school. But as China's repression increased, authorities began interrogating him, and people he knew started disappearing. Fearing he too could be disappeared, Kashgar fled with his wife and young daughter. At VOA, Kashgar now reports on Xinjiang and China's minorities.
At the end, I would feel joy and comfort in doing this because I know that I am making some impact in letting the world know what is happening.
Knowing that silence is no guarantee of safety, Kashgar says he is ready to share his stories and those of others by writing under his real name. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Washington.
And that'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, visit us online at voanews.com and follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In 2008, using tactics similar to those it later utilized in eastern Ukraine, Russia exacerbated and fomented unrest in northern Georgia, its neighbor in the southern Caucasus. Under the pretext of protecting its citizens in Georgia's regions of Abkhazia and South Ossetia, Russia attacked the former Soviet Republic on August 1, 2008. In the process, about 1,000 Georgians died, and another 3,000 were displaced, most of them ethnic Georgians. 15 years ago, Russia's aggression upended the lives and livelihoods of millions of Georgia's civilians, said Acting Deputy Representative to the United Nations, Jeffrey De Laurentiis.
Many of these individuals remain unable to return to their pre-conflict lives and homes. Many remain unable to enjoy peace and security.
On August 25, 2008, the Russian Federation officially recognized Abkhazia and southern Ossetia as independent nations. Four other countries have joined Russia in doing so, while most others considered the breakaway republics to be part of Georgia. However, Russian troops stationed in Abkhazia and southern Ossetia effectively enforced the separation of Georgia from about one-fifth of its territory. The United States fully supports Georgia's sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity within its internationally recognized borders, said Ambassador De Laurentiis. Russia's military presence in the Georgian regions of Abkhazia and southern Ossetia are the result of its unlawful invasion.
Russia continues to violate the territorial integrity of Georgia and undermines Georgia's sovereignty, threatening not only Georgia, but also the principles enshrined in the UN Charter. We call on Russia to cease its recognition of the so-called independence of the Georgian regions of Abkhazia and South Ossetia, which are integral parts of Georgia's territory. We also call on Russia to fulfill its obligations under the 2008 ceasefire agreement to withdraw its forces to pre-conflict positions and to allow and facilitate unhindered access for humanitarian organizations.
Russia and the de facto authorities in Abkhazia and South Ossetia, said Ambassador De Laurentiis. need to take immediate steps to respect human rights in Abkhazia and South Ossetia, cease construction of barriers along the administrative boundary lines, and create security conditions conducive to the voluntary, safe, dignified, and unhindered return and reintegration of internally displaced persons and refugees.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.